Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway, which is to say, lots of love triangles. Will they, won't they? That is what we're all thinking with Book 1, Chapter 11, The Red and the Black. Madame de Renal is starting to have some mixed emotions. Will they, won't they? They probably will. Our treat said she had tasted that evening a brand new happiness. Now she found herself plunged all of a sudden into atrocious misery. Madame de Renal had no experience of life. These two sentences remind me of Eve and the Fall. Madame de Renal has been so sheltered in her perfect aristocratic life, where everything is just so. Things have been arranged for her comfort. Her life is one of leisure, and she lives in such ignorance. When she tastes the knowledge of passion / love / lust, at first it's this beautiful revelation bringing happiness, but it quickly becomes a curse. As Julian wonders what he will say to the ladies of the house, the narrator comments that he had no idea that his soul functioned precisely at the level of petty events, and that he often couldn't even hold a conversation with the ladies of the house due to the power and the grandeur that had been turning this young, ambitious man's soul upside down. I find it funny that Julian is so wrapped up and warped by his aspirations to grandeur that he is unable to have a regular, coherent conversation. He can't even hack it at the petty events level because he's mentally obsessing over the soaring hawk level. It's such a stark contrast, the reality versus his beliefs. I know Techrific has talked about Julian being a version of Machiavelli's The Prince, and we can safely say that he already aligns with that in his inner life / worldview. But I don't think he needs to work on his execution and portraying himself in a more competent light. Or he is going to run into some serious problems eventually. Also meant to post this a couple of chapters back as a chapter summary for chapter 9, but it's still relevant as it's also a summary of Julian and Madame de Renal's relationship. And there's a YouTube clip linked. Let's have a look. YouTube. Foreigner. It's the song Head Games. I think that's pretty much the joke. Head Games. Very 80s. I think it's Head Games on Julian's part. Madame de Renal is kind of just being swept up by the whole thing. Techrific says, it's very sad too. Ideas can have such a detrimental effect on our young minds. Swim said the Mama Fishy says the newspaper Eliza reads from was a conservative daily paper, virtually an organ for the conservative ultra party. Mm-hmm. I wonder what conservative meant then. I'm not versed well enough in the politics of the time and what was going on. I suppose Napoleon stood for liberalism, didn't he? I don't know enough. Full stop. Alright, now I get a frog in my throat. Just when I am about to read a chapter. How bloody convenient. Alright, let's read this chapter. Chapter 12, which is entitled A Journey. In Paris one finds elegant people. In the provinces there may be people of character. That's a CS quote. By 5 o'clock the following morning, before Madame de Renal was visible, Julian had obtained 3 days' leave from her husband. Contrary to what he had expected, Julian found himself wanting to see her. He dreamed of her pretty hand. He's really obsessed with her hand, isn't he? Oh my God. He went down to the garden. Madame de Renal made him wait a long time, but if he had been in love, he would have made her out behind the half-closed shutters of the first floor. Her forehead leaning against the glass, she was looking at him. Finally, in spite of her resolutions, she decided to make an appearance in the garden. Her natural pallor had given way to the most vivid colouring. This simple and innocent woman was obviously upset. A feeling of embarrassment and even of anger transformed that expression of profound serenity, of being above all the commonplace preoccupations of life, that lent such charm to her heavenly face. Julian quickly went up to her. He admired the beautiful arms that a hastily thrown-on shawl allowed him to see. The freshness of the morning air seemed to enhance the brilliance of a complexion that her night's suffering had only made more sensitive to every impression. This loveliness, modest and appealing, yet informed by thought in a way that one never finds in the lower classes, seemed to reveal to Julian a capacity in his own soul of which he had never been before conscious. Engrossed by his admiration of the beauties that surprised his eager gaze, Julian had not a thought of the affectionate welcome he expected to receive. He was therefore all the more taken aback by the glacial coldness she sought to show him, and through which he believed he could even discern a wish to put him in his place. The smile of pleasure died on his lips. He reminded himself of the rank he occupied in society, and above all in the eyes of a rich and noble heiress. In an instant his physiognomy expressed nothing but aloofness and self-reproach. He felt a violent resentment at having delayed his departure more than an hour in order to receive such a humiliating reception. Only an idiot, he told himself, gets in a rage over other people. A stone falls because it is heavy. Will I never grow up? When, oh when, will I acquire the sensible custom of giving these people my soul only in proportion to what they pay for it? If I want to be respected by them and myself, I must show them what that while my poverty engages with their wealth, my heart is 1,000 miles away from their insolence, placed in a sphere too high to be reached by their marks of disdain or of favour. While these sentiments jostled in the young tutor's mind, his expressive features took on a look of suffering pride and ferocity. Madame de Renal was much disturbed by this. The virtuous coldness with which she had wished to cloak herself gave way to an expression of interest, and an interest animated by all her surprise at the sudden changes she saw. The meaningless words one exchanges in the morning about one's health and the fineness of the day petered out between the two at once. Julian, whose judgment was unclouded by any passion, very quickly found a way to signify to Madame de Renal how little he felt of on friendly terms with her. He said nothing about the trip he was going to undertake, bowed to her and departed. As she watched him go, cast down by the sombre pride she read in eyes that had been so loving the evening before, her eldest son ran up from the bottom of the garden and hugged her, saying, "We've got a holiday. Monsieur Julian's off on a journey." At these words, Madame de Renal was stricken by a deadly chill. She was unhappy in her virtue, and in her weakness unhappier still. This new development began to occupy her imagination entirely. She was carried far beyond the wise resolutions derived from the terrible night she had just endured. It was no longer a matter of resistance to so attractive a lover, but a matter of losing him forever. She was obliged to be present at lunch to increase her affliction. Monsieur de Renal and Madame de Ville talked of nothing but Julian's departure. The mayor of Verrières had noticed an element of insolence in the firm tone with which the latter had demanded leave. "This little peasant certainly has an offer from someone in his pocket, but that someone, even if it should be Monsieur Valenod, ought to be somewhat deterred by the sum of 600 francs you'd have to find to pay him every year. Yesterday at Verrières there was a demand for 3 days' delay to think about it, and this morning, so as not to have to give me an answer, the little gentleman has left for the mountains. To have to bother about a low workman who plays up, see what we've come to. Since my husband, who has no idea how profoundly he has wounded Julian, thinks he is leaving us, what should I myself think? Madame de Renal said to herself. Ah, it's all over now. So that she could at least weep freely and not have to respond to Madame de Ville's questioning, she complained of a shocking headache and retired to bed. That's women all over, repeated Monsieur de Renal. There's always something ailing those complicated machines, and he departed bantering. While Madame de Renal was a prey to the cruelest manifestations of the terrible passion to which chance had subjected her, Julian blithely went on his way through the most beautiful scenery that mountains can afford. He had to cross a big range to the north of Vergy. The path he followed, rising gradually through the great beech woods, makes innumerable zigzags along the slope of the tall mountain which delimits the Doubs Valley on the north. Soon the traveller's gaze, passing above the lower slopes which flank the course of the Doubs southward, reaches right across to the fertile plains of the Burgundy and Beaujolais. However insensitive this ambitious young man's soul was to this kind of beauty, he was unable to help himself pausing from time to time to survey so vast and so imposing a prospect. At last he got to the summit of the great mountain which must be crossed on this route to reach the lonely valley inhabited by his friend Fouque, the young wood merchant. Julian was in no hurry to see him, nor any other human being. Concealed like a bird of prey amidst the bare rocks which crowned the mountains, he would be able to see anyone approaching from a distance. He discovered a little grotto in the middle of the almost sheer incline of one of the rocks. He made his way towards it, and was soon established in this retreat. Here, said he, his eyes sparkling with joy, men can do me no harm. He had the idea of giving himself the pleasure of writing his thoughts down, a thing which everywhere else was so dangerous. A square piece of stone did duty as a desk. His pen flew. He was conscious of nothing around him. At last, he noticed that the sun was setting behind the distant mountains of Beaujolais. Why don't I spend the night here, he said to himself. I've got some bread. I am free. At the sound of this grand word, his soul was lifted up, for his hypocrisy entailed that he was not free, even in Fouque's house. His head couched on both hands, Julian sat in the grotto, happier than he had ever been in his life, stirred by his reveries and by the joy of liberty. Without thinking about it, he saw the last rays of sunset fade one by one. In the midst of the vast obscurity, his soul wandered, picturing what he imagined he would find in Paris one day. First of all, there was a woman, more beautiful and of much higher spirit than any he had been able to meet in the provinces. He loved with passion, and was loved. If he was separate from her for a few moments, it was but to go off and cover himself in glory, and so deserve to be loved even more. Even supposing he had Julian's imagination, a young man brought up among the sad truths of Parisian society would be at this point in his story, have been woken up by cold irony. Great deeds would have evaporated with the hope of achieving them. To give place to the maxim so well known that says, leave your mistress and, oh dear, risk being deceived two or three times a day. The young peasant saw nothing between himself and the most heroic actions, save lack of opportunity. But profound darkness had succeeded day, and he still had 2 leagues to cover in order to reach the hamlet where Fouque lived. Before leaving the grotto, Julian lit a fire and carefully burned all he had written. He amazed his friend by knocking on his door at 1 in the morning. He found Fouque busy writing up his accounts. The latter was a tall young man, rather badly built, with large, hard features and infinitely long nose and a great deal of good nature hidden beneath this unattractive exterior. So you've had a row with your Monsieur de Renal. Is it that which brings you here so suddenly like this? Julian told him his own version of yesterday's events. Remain here with me, said Fouque. I see that you now know Monsieur de Renal, Monsieur Valenod, sub-prefect Mouguron, and Curé Chelan. You've understood the finer points of character of those people, so you're in a position to take part in business transactions. You're better at arithmetic than me, and could take over my accounts. I make big profits in my trade. The impossibility of doing everything myself and the fear of finding anyone I can take into partnership to be a crook is always stopping me from doing first-rate business. It was less than a month ago that I allowed Michaud from St. Armand, whom I hadn't seen for 6 years and met by chance at the Pontarlier sale, to make 6,000 francs. Why shouldn't you have earned that 6,000 yourself, or 3,000 anyway? For if you had been with me that day, I would have bid for that cutting of wood, and they would have all let me have it soon enough. Be my partner. This offer put Julien in ill humour. It disturbed his dreams. During supper, which, since Fouque lived alone, the two men prepared themselves like heroes in Homer, he showed his accounts to Julien and demonstrated how profitable the wood trade was. Fouque had the highest opinion of Julien's judgment and character. When at last the latter was alone in his little pine-lined room, "It's true that I could earn a few thousand francs here," he said to himself, "then go back better equipped to the profession of soldier or priest, depending on the fashion currently ascendant in France. The little hoard I would have amassed would smooth out all sorts of small difficulties. Being solitary here in the mountains, I'd be able to do something to reduce the frightful ignorance I have but so many things that occupy the denizens of the salons." But Fouque has renounced marriage, and has told me several times that solitude makes him unhappy. It is obvious that if he takes a partner who has no capital to pour into his business, it is in the hope that he will obtain a comrade who will never leave him. "Would I then deceive my friend?" cried Julien to himself, disturbed. This being, whose usual means of survival were hypocrisy and total lack of sympathy, was unable to tolerate the thought of the slightest lack of delicacy towards a man who loved him. But all of a sudden Julien was happy again. He had a reason to refuse. What, I'd hardly lose 7 or 8 years. I'd be 28. But at that age, Bonaparte had done his greatest deeds. By the time I'll have made some money by running around obscure timber sales and currying favour with a few low-ranking rogues, who can say if I'd still possess that sacred fire with which one makes one's name? The following morning, with great self-possession, Julien replied to the good Fouque, who considered the question of partnership as settled, that his calling to the sacred ministry of the altar would not permit him to accept. Fouque could not overcome his surprise. "But do you realize," he repeated, "that I am making you a partner, or, if you prefer, I am letting you have 4,000 francs a year, and you want to go back home to Monsieur de Renal, who despises you like the mud on his boots, when you have 200 louis in front of you? What's to stop you going into the seminary? I'll say more, I'll commit myself to finding you the best living in the district, for," added Fouque in a lower voice, "I supply firewood to Monsieur, I let him them have the finest heart of oak, which they pay me for as if it were white wood, but never was money so well spent." Nothing could conquer Julien's vocation. Fouque ended up thinking he was a little crazy. On the third day, very early in the morning, Julien left his friend in order to spend the day among the rocks of the high mountain. He found his little grotto again, but he no longer felt peace in his soul, his friend's offers having taken that away. Like Hercules, he found himself placed not between vice and virtue, but between the mediocrity consequent on assured well-being and all the heroic dreams of his youth. "So I lack true resolution," he said to himself. This was the suspicion which gave him most pain. "I'm not the wood out of which great men are fashioned, since I'm afraid that 8 years spent earning my bread will rob me of the sublime energy required to do extraordinary things." All right, there we go. There was chapter 12. Have your say about chapter 12 over at the subreddit. Thank you very much for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.